Didn't you make the comment about it would be an ass move to fly to Chechnya? Am I saying that wrong? Chechnya?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Okay, yes. Now I remember. Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
You're so funny, you've forgotten your own stuff.
I'm an idiot savant with
like, no, I hope one day to be that funny.
He spoke for 2.5 hours with Gruber. He's got nothing left.
Yeah, I'm all done.
See, I wish to be that witty where like I'd have to prepare for something that funny. I'd have to write down and draft it out. Like I just can't be that
funny. I don't know why I picked Chechnya. It was just far away.
And oh, it was perfect.
Kind of random, kind of a hellhole, like a war torn hellhole. You know? Whatever. It just comes out.
Are you drinking yet, guy?
No, should I be? Are you gonna
you're gonna drink.
I'll fix something up.
We got the all clear from that because I just assumed that was the way it was. But again, I'm a noob at this, so I don't know. You guys roll.
Debug is actually, I mean, for the you know panel discussions, it's you know you can't really study up for that.
Yeah,
for the interviews, I actually do a lot of research and I come at it pretty seriously.
Oh, no, you guys do a great. I mean, I don't listen to that many podcasts and I like your interviews. Your interviews are always good of people because you have specific questions you're asking and they're not the typical questions that people would ask.
Thanks,
and usually
man.
Very well researched.
What's your favorite app?
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of tree would you be?
I'm kind of nervous though. What are we gonna say about iOS 7 that hasn't been said?
So you know what's funny? I'm kind of nervous too because I actually had to. This is part two of a roundtable thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had to miss the previous one. Like at the last minute, something came up, so I missed it, and I don't know what was said.
Well, you know, I got a worse problem, guy. the smarter of our two or three man development team.
He's already on.
Yeah. So I'm just like, I'm on. You know, you got the second string in now.
You spoiled all your good lines.
Yeah.
I'm glad to know I'm in the cool crowd. That's what I'm glad to know. I want to be in the underdog. Yeah. The underdog panel.
We should talk for an hour or so about Marco writing an app for
podcasts.
I could give a shit about playing him. I never listened to him. But man, I want to record him well.
Do you honestly not listen to podcasts?
I do listen to podcasts, but I don't have any commute. I work at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I run the same thing.
I could potentially listen to him while I'm cooking dinner or something like that, or maybe walking the dog, but that's my time to interact with my wife and whoever else. So it's
I never used to listen to podcasts, and for some reason now I can listen to them while programming.
Yeah, you were saying that the last time we saw each other, that you listen to them during the day, like it's your office noise.
Yeah.
Oh man,
I could not do that.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't think it's healthy. I think I'm gonna burn out my brain, but I do yeah. it. Yeah.
Well, you're paying attention to one thing or the other, right? It's like being in an office. You know, if somebody's having a conversation in the next cubicle, you're either like it's either white noise and you're not listening to it, or you're listening to it and not.
Right. Yeah. I tend to perk up when I hear something interesting happening. And
I have a suspicion you're multi-core.
It could be. You know,
he has two GPUs. That guy, yeah. English.
No.
So a friend of mine used to do. Like media scanning. I can't remember what the job was, but basically he'd listen to like three or four radio shows at once. And like any mention of a product or like a certain topic, he would sort of tag it in that stream. And so he would have like multiple audio streams going on at one time in order to identify stuff. And that boggles my mind.
It drives my wife crazy that I can't listen to something and focus on something else at the same time.
Yeah. I used to be able to.
She'll have the TV on all the time just for like background noise for her. But if it's on, I cannot do anything else but watch it. Like I can't multitask.
Yeah, my mom used to complain when I was growing up that if I was reading a book, I was just like, she could not get my attention. Right? It's like I'm reading, right? I'm totally focused on reading.
You know what I like about that is that it works out like well. It's like you get to ignore your mom and be like, look, it's healthy, I'm reading.
So it's like, she kind of enforced it, right? Oh, this is a good thing.
I could be doing drugs, mom, but I'm reading a book.
Exactly.
Just say no to books, son.
You know, I wouldn't want to change that, though. Like, I don't think that was a behavior I would want to get out of. Like, I like that I could just get into a book and be totally engrossed into it.
In our profession, the most important thing is the ability to focus. It really is. You know, like, to sit there and debug for 3 or 4 hours and, you know, heads down, the rest of the world doesn't exist. I mean, there aren't many professions that require you to do that. I mean, air traffic controllers have, like, total focus. You know, we have total focus. Nobody dies if we lose focus, though. So
thank God. Holy cow.
We're not the best.
Coding related deaths were very minor last year.
Exactly. I think it's why developers don't want to give up coding too. Like they treasure it so much because they're worried nothing else that I could do, you know, if I'm running a business or anything, nothing related to that requires that level of devotion or attention. And I think that's why we treasure it. We hold on to it so long and don't want to give it up.
You know, this is a lot more interesting than talking about the iOS 7, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why I'm not trying to get in on topic at all.
I can't go too far or I'll spoil my whole Singleton talk. And I really just will get up and flash slides and play music.
You know what? It's fine because I think this will probably come out and, you know, after Singleton.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
So, doesn't matter. Spoil away.
There'll just be a duplicate for everybody. Those at the conference.
So, Luke, how do you work? What's your like process?
I just hire Indians and drink all day. That's not how you do it.
It's not how I do it, but you know, to each his own, I guess. Yeah.
My pattern seems to be I hire Canadians recently. Like our last like 3 or 4 hires have been Canadians. They're starting to overwhelm us.
Yes. What's the problem, man?
They really are. They're great people. They talk about hockey a little too much for my own liking, but
it just started. So give them a break.
The hockey, and now they're throwing it in our faces is our, you know, the U.S. government is totally shut down. They're like, ha ha ha, look at us in our free healthcare. I'm like, yeah.
It won't get any better this weekend, Rob. Sorry, but
yeah,
I'm actually going to try and just immigrate to Montreal while I'm there. I'm just going to be like, yeah, I don't want to go back.
I have come close to, from the Singleton account, actually just tweeting the address of our embassy and saying that asylum seekers can apply here.
Yeah. I've had
and
it
just because it would be sort
funny.
Of the meanest thing I could do, like that. Yeah, it would be funny, but it's kind of it's a bit of a dick move.
No. I think it's totally fine.
Asylum seekers go to the embassy. A little bit.
Well, I mean,
from an official conference thing, that's a little bit tough.
You should tweet it, guy, and then retweet it from the conference. Then you have deniability.
Yeah.
I can't take non-people Twitter accounts seriously. Like even the ones that I run, like for our apps. And for the company, I always feel like I can't tweet anything seriously from there because it's like I'm tweeting like a person, but I'm not a person.
It's weird. It's like you take on a character, right? That's just not. I mean, yeah, like Merchantcraft is not you. It is this weird amalgam that is, you know, the company ethos, I guess.
Yeah, Merchantcraft has been hard. We had an account for years and we never tweeted at all. And then we hired a marketing person and she's been very, you know, oh, we've got to get into this. We've got to tweet more. And I've been really reticent because I don't know. I mean, I feel like unless we have something relevant to say, I would rather not say anything at all. Cause
yeah, that's like
it's just me. I can say whatever I want. I can tweet pictures of my kids and, you know, puppy dogs.
Yeah.
It's good to pimp yourself, but it's also good to think about the person who is receiving your pimp.
Yeah. So. Receiving your pimp. That sounds like
you're John. Yeah, well, you're John.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds like a push.
Thank you, guy. You obviously know more about this than I do.
Oh no, I'm you know, I actually ran a prostitution ring for years, before I learned how to program. It's what I did for a living.
This is fantastic. I was really wondering where the line was on this, and that's great. It's well defined now.
There's no line. Yeah. It's just us chatting. Don't worry about it. Well, we're not even talking about what we're supposed to be talking about. So
who cares? It's actually better than what we're supposed to talk about.
That's what I was saying. It's like, you know, why
ruin it with iOS 7?
Well, I mean, I'm gonna breach it. We all love iOS 7. I mean,
I don't get the hate for it at all.
My only hate for it is that it's unfinished.
Yeah,
there are bits all over the place. It's like, I had a navigation controller get all screwed up yesterday because the status bar height and all that automatic status bar stuff, because an alert view came up at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. I moved when the alert view came up and that problem. It's like, what the fuck? Right? That's, how did that?
I like it that it's incomplete though. Because I feel like it meant that they really tried to do something. They didn't. They, everybody's always criticizing Apple that they always just do slow evolutions. And here was an example where they just said, we're ripping the Band-Aid off. This is going to be totally different and totally new. And I think as developers, we're probably a select group that has been working and been using iOS 7 for as long as we have. Most people have weeks with it. And, we have months with it. I'm crazy. I put it on my carry like 2 weeks after WWDC. So I've been living with it for a while and I really like it. But
in that, in iOS 7 case, it was kind of, you kind of had to install it almost right away because you really had to get a feel of it. It's not like previous iOS releases where it was just an incremental release, whereas this is that was pretty new. So we didn't have a choice.
All the designers that I know had installed it almost immediately because they had to feel the because it was pretty obvious from the keynote and the presentations that it's like the screenshots don't cut it, right? You need to understand the interactions and how everything.
Yeah,
feels, and all our designers, they were on that day one. Same thing, what Luke just said. You had to learn the interactions. You had to learn the what made it.
I just liked it I think later. It could have been that day or maybe the next day. I saw it on Luke's iPod Touch just before we did some kind of show. It could have been like a live debug show. And anyway, I played with it 5 minutes before going on. And as soon as I sort of started interacting with it, my experience of it changed. I got it. I understood it. If you look at screenshots on the Apple website, you're like, what the fuck is this? This is just weird and ham-fisted. But when you start using it, it's a different thing entirely.
Yeah. When you start doing the task switcher and that being able to search on any page and, there's just so many little nice details throughout the thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the lock screens. I always hated those black bars because, I had some nice pictures there and it's like those freaking bars got in the way.
Yeah.
I see that every day probably 20 or 30 times, probably more.
Do you have a 5X?
No, I don't.
Okay. I do.
Turns out if you pick a great lock screen photo and if you've got a 5S, you'll just never see it because the touch ID kicks in so quickly that it just gets dismissed,
Don't get me started on the 5S and don't get me started on touch ID. I think it's I've had a lot of problems with it. Really? I actually do not like it.
What, are you eating like greasy chicken all the time or what?
I guess so. I have very large thumbs. I don't know what it is.
I was gonna say the reason I'm hesitant is I'm too big.
Just for the world.
He's too huge.
You don't fit into anybody's imagination. That's how big you are.
You know, it's funny. These conferences, like, you know, at Singleton and everything, people always come up to me and go, boy, you really are tall. Yeah. And it's fine. You know, it's like, because, you know, we all have that problem, right? It's like we have these.
We don't all have the too-tall problem.
We have perceptions of people from, you know, what they are like on Twitter.
Right.
And, okay. You know, what photos you see them in various places.
Yeah, people are always surprised that I'm trendly.
Right.
No, well, people kind of expect me to be a dick.
Yeah, well, I have the exact same problem, Guy. You know, Guy, you're not as loud as you are on Twitter.
Right.
I think it's a lot of it does have to do with Twitter, because, like, Craig, when Melissa met you at NSConf, like, mm-hmm. I was telling her, I was like, oh, yeah, he's this really tall guy, this. And she came up later and she's like, well, he's not that tall. Like, it's one of those, like, I think it's a personality. Like, people have this persona. They meet you and expect to meet Chuck. And you're totally the opposite.
You should bring Chuck at the Singleton instead this year.
No, I'm sorry that I'm going to be missing it. It's like, it's such a great.
Oh yeah, right. You're not coming this year.
Shut up. You know, it's just, you know, sometimes things don't, the stars don't align. Yeah, it didn't align this year.
It's too bad. It's the last one we're doing. But well,
oops.
Well, the question, do you pre-announce that it's going to be the last one before you
start? Oh, yeah. Well, in this theoretical,
I see, that's the
really thing. Asshole move is, yeah, we'd say this is the last one, here's the price, and then we'd just take the money and run. Just
drop the mic.
Right. I like that Luke's not laughing along.
I'm debugging. I thought it was the whole purpose of their show.
Yeah, exactly.
So to get back to the Touch ID, it's funny because I think they have improved the unlock experience so much in iOS 7 just without the Touch ID sensor that I'm expecting magic to happen sometimes. And, like, when it works, it's great, but it doesn't always work when I expect it to work. And then there's the occasional thing when I want to turn on my phone and see the notifications, but it goes straight to my home screen. And it's like, once you do that, like, Twitterific, your notifications are gone. Like, you can't go into the notification center and see them. It's already wiped them out, which is, that's not Twitterific's fault. That's what I would expect. Yeah,
I was going to say, that's the way notifications work.
Yeah. And there's been so many times where it's like someone, like I have on not my main account, but my, you know, Martian Crafts and Briefs account, I have it notified when somebody retweets it or favorites it or something like that. And I mean, there's no way really to go back and get that information once it's gone through. And there's been so many times that's happened. And so it seems like it doesn't work when I want it to work. And when I want it to work, I'm waiting for it to work and, like, moving my thumb around. And in my mind, I'm just thinking it would be a lot faster if I just entered my password, my passcode. Because you still have to have
moving your thumb around doesn't help you.
It does because there's that whole thing. Apparently, you need to cover the outer ring.
Yeah, you want to lift your thumb off, like, and then put it back down and keep it stationary. Moving it doesn't do shit.
It's literally a moving target.
Yeah, like you said, it's not. For some reason, I don't know. Maybe I've got a mental block, or the technology was just not meant for me. But I found it more disruptive than I have amazing.
I find it great. I mean, you show it to me this weekend exactly what you do, because maybe, I don't know, for me it's been working fine, but maybe I just fall within the parameters that they're designed for,
Well, and the check for me is, you know, I don't test my code on my carry phone. I'll test on a specific device that I'll use for development. Mm-hmm. And like right now I'm using a 5C. Is my test device for this one app. And when I go to write, I'm writing code and I need to test that, and I go to unlock that, it just feels so much faster. And so that's where it's like, in my mind, I'm like, there's not this barrier there, because it's like my mind knows, oh no, you don't have this stupid fucking sensor. Just do it like you've always done it. And that could just be me resisting the future, but.
Right.
Yeah. Craig, the thing that's interesting for me is that the 5S is, I think, going to become a test bed for all the new technologies, right? You know, there's obviously Touch ID. This is a new thing. All the components are new. All the technology's new. And, you know, it sounds like it works great for a lot of people, but then there's people like Rob where it doesn't work, right? And they've got a device now that they can experiment with and figure out, you know, how it works, why it doesn't work. And you know, by the time that thing hits the mass market device, the iPhone 5C or 6C or whatever they're going to call it, it's going to be a refined technology. So, you know, that second generation is really going to benefit from it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the 6S, let's call it, is going to improve on it some other way, right? You know, it's a pretty smart thing that Apple's doing here. It's like, you know, that was the piece I did at Furbo about the, you know, Mercedes S-Class, right? That has been their test bed for all the new technologies for, you know, 50 years plus. And, you know, you're a guinea pig right now, Rob. Really?
Yeah.
You're one of those crash test dummies, right?
You're Apple's 5C.
I'll be honest, and you joke, Renee, but I've told more than one person that I got a white 5C, and I wish I got the 5C just with the T-Mobile totally unlocked version. And I wish I had gotten that as the Verizon phone, and that would have been my carry phone, because I love the case better on the 5C, much better than I like the metal. I've never been a fan of the metal either. And I know I'm very much in the minority there.
I loved my 5C. I got the Hulk green 5C, and it really sounds stupid or cheesy, but it really is so much fun because you see iOS 7 with the matching wallpaper and the translucency, and it feels like an integral product. I love Touch ID. Touch ID, like Guy said, it works flawlessly for me. I like it so much, I hold my finger on my iPad and start cursing because it's not working. but the 5C is a great phone too.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll see a few this weekend. So
yeah, I've got the white one, and the outer shell, the way I'm describing it to people, is it feels like those Eames molded plastic chairs that you can get, you know, from like Design Within Reach or something like that. It is a very high end plastic, and the way it's molded around the edges, it's very smooth. It feels, it's this weird thing where it's grippy but slippery at the same time. Like, it feels slick in your hand, but it doesn't slide off your hand. Like, it's easy to grip. And it feels so much better. Every time I pick it up, I'm like, man, I love this device. But I don't know. So maybe next year I'll just get the 6C, and I'll just get a 6S as a test device. And
Well, your 6C is going to be like your 5S. Except for plastic. Probably.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. But I'm assuming in a year I'll be used to the Touch ID.
Yeah, I mean, you may not have a choice, because maybe at that time all iOS devices will have Touch ID.
Yeah, and they're rumoring the iPads are going to have that as well. So that's I clearly that's a future. It's going to get better. I also think
that you need to learn to use it. Like, I think it's more convenient for not typing your Apple ID password. Whereas
that is true.
Like you say, you kind of lose the context of this, of the lock screen. In that case, you can just like do the old way where you just unlock the device and swipe to unlock. And then you have to type your PIN, but at least you get to see what's any notifications you might have missed.
Yeah, you actually hit on something where I think that's, I've been trying to like figure out what my issue with it is. And I think when I need to use it for my iTunes password, I like it because it's a very literal action. It's saying like, you know, put your finger on the home button, hold it over there and scan your fingerprint. But when you're opening the device, it's like it's not just entering your passcode, it's rethinking how you turn on the device. Mm-hmm. So like now I have to think about it. Like it used to be, I would wake up my device by hitting the home button and not hitting the sleep wake button. But now I feel like they're two different actions. You know, if Touch ID works the way you want it to work, if you wake up your device with the home button, it's going to open and unlock the device. But if you hit the sleep, you know, the sleep wake button, it's going to wake it up, but not unlock it. And so like, I've had to train myself to think about, okay, now when I'm pulling my phone out of my pocket, what do I want to do? Am I checking a notification and going to put it back in my pocket, or do I want to open it and do something with it? And so it's a little bit of retraining too. And that's where I think these people that are just saying it's magical, it's frustrating because it's not magical.
Did you have to teach yourself to double click on the home button?
Don't get me started on the double click to the home button. If I think Apple missed an opportunity with iOS 7. I think when you hit the home button, it should go to the multitasking view instead of the springboard.
I wanted to swipe up for multitasking, I think like WebOS did. I always found that the most natural.
BB10 does that too.
Yeah, the
problem I have is that all of the edges are getting very sensitive.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it is nice to have shortcuts, but when the shortcuts become accidental gestures, then it's kind of a pain in the ass. It's like, you know, it's the old, oh, you grab your phone to, you know, do something and you don't realize that you're hitting the scroll to top in your Twitter timeline.
Yeah, I came out against the gestures on the iPad. I was against before they shift, like during the developer
build. Those 4 and 5.
Yeah, and they're cool. Yeah. You know, you can swipe between apps, and you can like pinch, and you know, it's rubber banding, but it steals functionality from an app.
So
Fruit Ninja your way into your mail app.
So we had a real problem today. Like, this was something we got a support request just yesterday. Our new version of our iOS app for briefcase shipped just yesterday. Finally, we submitted it with the rest of the iOS 7 world, and it just got out there. And one of the things we had to solve was our old way to get out of a brief when you were playing it was to edge swipe from the bottom. Now, edge swipe from the bottom is control center. And so we had to get rid of, we had to change that. You know, we watched it through the betas, and they did that thing now where you have to swipe twice when you're in a full screen app, but it's still, didn't work reliably. So we changed our gesture.
I'm so glad we had some early versions of Twitterific where we had edge gestures to switch between accounts and do some other stuff, you know, like you'd swipe from the right to start a reply. You know, swipe to the left to switch accounts and do some other stuff. And I'm glad we took those out because, well, the reason we took them out is because they were fiddly. They just felt like you didn't feel natural.
Yeah. Ours was a necessity. I mean, we can't really put.
Yeah. Yeah.
You lose the effect if we have to do something that doesn't require Chrome. Yeah.
You need an escape key.
Yeah.
You need something that's,
And so what we changed it to in iOS 7 is a 3-finger tap. And it turned out we were already thinking about this problem because we ran into this with Android, and we're working on an Android version that's in beta right now. And so we knew we couldn't rely on the swipe to the bottom. So we said, all right, let's do a 3-finger tap. Well, someone submitted a bug yesterday with accessibility. If they have zooming turned on, it's enabled with a 3-finger tap. Now that's fine. You know, that's our bad. We should have caught it. And so we've been looking to fix the issue. And all Apple gives you is that you can say that there's a conflict with it. So the user opens the app, and if we say, yeah, we're conflicting with one of the accessibility gestures, they'll throw up an alert that says, this app is in conflict. Do you want to turn off the accessibility feature or not? It's a horrible message. It's shitty. And we're now trying to come up with another gesture, and you know, because we need to have an alternative gesture for people who are using the accessibility controls.
And we ended up doing tap and hold with the X-scope mirror thing. It's just it was the easiest, most unlikely thing.
The tap and hold for us, the reason we've reserved that is that we think eventually we're going to add better tap support for the briefs themselves. And so if we want to add a tap and hold gesture, which is likely that our users would want to do that, if we've reserved that, then it's like a – I don't know. We were trying to go for something esoteric that users would never want to do, and it turns out Apple's like, yeah, swipe from the bottom or, you know, these other things.
It's interesting as we get more – it's like – weirdo. It's like TextMate, you know, keyboard shortcuts. I could never use TextMate. I could never learn all those. You know, it's like Control Option Shift 3 does something. Yeah.
We're getting
to that point with gestures. It's like, and they're hard to remember. In fact, some people don't even know. We get this in support a lot that people don't know that you can tap on the status bar to scroll the table view to the top. There are a lot of people who don't know that. So
you know what's funny about that is that they've probably done it and had no idea what they did.
Oh, I must have broke something.
View just jump.
I broke something.
It's the kind of gesture that you just find by accident.
Yeah.
But the edge swipe gesture I think they still work fairly well. We're using them in screens, but you gotta get used to it just to make the user understand that they have to start swiping from the edge of the device, not the display. But once you get used to it, they work fairly well, but. Yeah, it's not perfect.
I like gestures. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be doing gestures and that they're evil, but it's just I think we're gonna run into a situation here soon. This is the one where Rob is just describing is that we're kind of out of gestures that are natural, right?
Well, and that Apple has them reserved in some way, or they don't conflict because
there are a lot of weird gestures once you start. Going into voiceover.
Mm. Yeah, and the double dipping on the home screen, you can.
It's kind of hard to argue that. Yeah. I personally don't like the fact that the gestures on the iPad are on by default. I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Voiceover, that's a whole new world. I mean, you have to expect that stuff's going to be. Different in that kind of interaction.
I wish they gave us better ways to handle when the accessibility is on and allowing us to detect it. And I feel like whenever you go to Apple, Apple's just like, well, you should be designing for it anyway. And it's like,
well, wait, what do you need?
I need to know when it's enabled so that I can do, you know, in this case, we would do an alternative gesture, something that's going to. Because the idea is that in our case, what we're trying to do is put a gesture in and not remove something from the user. So if they've turned on accessibility, then it's a reasonable trade-off to say, okay, because you have accessibility on, we're going to do a different gesture that may override another gesture that you want to put in your brief. But for users who aren't using the accessibility controls, we can give them a more esoteric control.
For alert views, right? An alert, an alert view, if you're not using accessibility, you know, you can usually find a button or whatever, but there's like you tap and hold on a tweet, and you're using VoiceOver, you get a big old huge list of things you can do with that tweet. And the people that are using VoiceOver love that because they can, you know, just swipe right, swipe right, swipe right, and they just power down through that big long menu to get to the thing they want, and then they tap once and it does, you know, the thing. And they it's pretty amazing to watch these people use.
Yeah, the technology is great. I just wish there was a way for us to better account for some of those instead of just saying, hey, we have a gesture that conflicts with that. I'd rather handle it more elegantly. But I mean, we filed radars and we're doing our good little Apple dance. We're being good little Apple developers. And
yeah. You know what? I was about to tell you that there was a function call for that AX API enabled, but it's only on the Mac and it's deprecated now. So
yeah. And we need, it's not just that accessibility is enabled. We need to know that this specific feature is enabled.
Right.
Go ahead.
On iOS, it's UI accessibility is VoiceOver running.
And that's for VoiceOver, but the zooming is separate from the VoiceOver. Right. And all you can do is register a conflict with it.
Ah, okay.
And that's it. Again, it's like, okay, let me register a conflict and put a custom message in there that'll direct them to our settings screen or something to change something. If you're not going to allow us to programmatically change things.
that's what radars are for, and that's I'm sure that's yep. why the like the location dialogues and all the other privacy things have little strings you can pass them now that say, you know, why do you need location?
Right.
Because a lot of times I would just like, you know, you're not going to tell me why you need location. Screw you. I'm not going to let you have it.
Yeah.
But if somebody, if an app, actually the developer comes to, you know, does the little extra bit of work to say, yeah, we need your location to, you know, do something based on your, you know, your,
yeah, location. To-do list when you're at the marketplace. Like, whatever. Like,
right.
Just fill something
exactly.
out.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Boom.
Yeah, I think if you're going to ask to sort of, not invade, but if you're going to ask to have access to somebody's location, spending a minute to at least explain why you want to have it
right.
means that you've probably spent a few minutes to work out why you need it. You know what I mean? It's like not a trivial yeah. feature. It's like you've actually bothered thinking about this, right?
Yeah, this is something if you get Nick Fletcher from Real Mac started on this, he can go on for a while. Like he, I think he actually gave a talk about this.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was NSConf last year that alert he was saying, views. And it was, yeah, and he's like half his talk was about like proper alert view messages. And if you want their location or you want to use, you know, push notifications, like you should fill out a message for it.
You know what I hate is when I go to a website and they want to have my location.
Yeah.
Especially some random website. It's like, no, just.
I feel like I trust websites less than I do an app. I don't know why. I feel like apps are inherently more restricted in what they can do. And so I'm more likely to give an app.
So for me, I mean, if it's not like a, you know, something from a friend, I mean, you know, if one of you guys, your website wanted, I'd be happy to tell you. But I visit a website and I own an app or I buy an app. Like there's a different, I feel that I'm passing through the web a lot.
Mm-hmm.
This is maybe a little bit weird. And like, I don't know how to, you know, talk about this without sounding all flighty. But when I go to a website, it's a very transient sort of experience. I'm going there and I will leave there. When I buy an app, it's mine. It's like I have some sort of ownership and relationship with
yeah.
it. Does that make sense?
No. It feels tangible in a way that a website doesn't.
Right.
It asks for the microphone permission in iOS 7, and the apps that ask for microphone now make me nervous because I don't, you know, it's the same thing. Why do you want the microphone?
Right. You know, what? Taking this back to iOS 7, it's that whole settings privacy screen is way better.
Yeah.
That you can go in and actually see. You know, right now I'm going to see who's using my microphone. Okay, Google Translate. Yeah, that makes sense. Google Maps? Huh? Did I ever enable that? What the hell was I thinking? Instagram can use my microphone? What?
Well, Instagram's video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
And all the Google stuff, it's their audio transcription stuff where you can say, okay, right. Google, speak right. to it.
But you know what, that's though? It, I mean, that took, like, we know our stuff, and it wasn't immediately apparent to you,
Chris, yeah.
why the microphone would be a thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like that, you know, for the end user, that's horrible.
Especially when you get eight of them in a row, they popping up.
Yeah,
at you.
Yeah, they don't ask it. They don't ask you for the permission when they actually need it. Like until I hit that microphone for Google Now, it's like that's when I want to give it microphone permissions. But if I use Google Maps and I never want to speak to it, it's like.
Is that true? Is that like when you launch it, does it check the plist and then check everything? Or is it because on the Mac, like if you try to access contacts on the Mac or address book, it will throw up a modal dialog box on the first time you try to access it.
Yeah, it's the same on iOS.
Horrible, horrible experience.
Especially when they're one after the other and you get like six or seven in a row.
Well, I mean, you launch like an innocuous app, like let's say I'm just going to say this. I don't know if it's true, but let's say Coda. You launch it, and it wants to populate your what's it called? Like the sign up dialogue, in the preferences so that you can actually purchase it, you know? So it checks your Mi address card. As soon as it calls into checking the Mi address card, address book contact information, that's a blocking call that'll put up a modal dialogue that'll stop the app from running, which is horrible.
The experience I've had is a ScreenFlow. I've had ScreenFlow crash on me in Mavericks pretty regularly now because apparently they must have changed the permission. Okay. And ScreenFlow hasn't updated. I'm assuming they're holding their Mavericks update until it's GM.
Yeah.
And it has a crash in it that's caught me a couple times. And it's like I would record a 15-minute screencast and it would just disappear.
Oh.
Because the app would just start crashing.
That stinks.
And as a developer, I know what's happening to them. And so I don't necessarily hold it. I'm like, oh, I know exactly what they're going through. You know, it's something changed, an entitlement changed or permission
like
changed.
Like in some ways we're really harsh to each other. And in some other ways we're like, yeah, that's not your fault.
I feel like if you've written Mac software, you're pretty nice to other people who've written Mac software because it's like you've got this mutual pain that you've gone through. Like, you know. Like war veterans that have been in the same battles together.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's something that's, you know, being nice to one another is one thing and critiquing the work is a different thing, right?
Yeah. But yeah, it's something like that. I can't even figure out why it wants the contacts entitlement. All
it's
I've done is
probably something
screen.
Goofy like wanting to populate the license information.
Yeah.
And you know what? I said Coda. I don't actually think Coda does that, but I've seen other apps do that, and it's kind of annoying.
But that warning was brought in Lion or Mountain Lion, I can remember.
Yeah, one of those, yeah.
So before that, you would just like pick up your info and fill it.
Yeah, it used to be fine. And because of the way that API works, what they ended up doing is like every time you try to call any one of the functions, it'll block and pop up that permission dialogue. And like it's ideally what you want is a method where you can ask nicely to get like a token that'll give you access to the address book. But because the security had to get sort of strapped on after the fact, it's this really ugly way of doing stuff. And I don't think it's crazy to look at, to try to populate the license information when you launch the app. It's traditionally hasn't been crazy, but the way that the framework works now makes it just bananas.
Well, and they don't, go ahead, Craig.
They did that under duress.
Yes. Right?
Remember there was all of this hoopla about, apps are using as path and then it was like, oh my God. And, you know, there was sort of this, oh my God, we got to do something. Right. So it's probably not the most elegant way to do it, but you know, they did need to do something.
Right? I totally agree.
Okay, this sucks. This is a hack, but solves the problem.
It kind of feels like a Windows, like where there's tons of warning, and at some point people just stop reading them, and it's even less secure than what was intended for.
Exactly, because you just keep pressing OK.
I will say, though, to their credit in iOS 7, I feel like they've gone back and some of those things where they made some gut reactions, they're better integrated and more thought through. I think they didn't just revisit the external aspects of iOS 7. They also revisited a lot of internal aspects that I thought was good. I mean, they didn't fix everything, but I think it feels like iOS 7 was two releases in that way. It was this, you know, visual change that everybody's talking about and freaking out about and going through these, but there was a lot of internal things they did as well that made a lot of sense, which almost makes me wonder, what did iOS 7 look like before Johnny Ive's team got a hold of it?
I was just going to say that I think it looked like all the stuff that happened all of the stuff that happened under the hood, I'm pretty sure was planned.
Yeah.
All of the stuff
scramble after
the fact.
I'm sure that the task switching and all that stuff had been in progress for maybe a year.
And the background download stuff.
Some
of the networking changes they made.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of neat stuff in there that takes more than a yearly cycle to get through.
Yeah. All of that, I'm sure that they would have done. Sorry, Craig, go ahead.
And you're absolutely right. It feels like two releases to me. And, you know, this kind of reminds me back in Leopard days where they bit off a lot and they introduced all these new great things and the release kind of was a little janky. And then they said, you know, we're not going to do any new features in Snow Leopard in the next release. We're just going to go through and make everything solid. And I bet we see some of that, probably not entirely like that, because, you know, everybody loves new features and there's going to be new phones that have something like Touch ID or, you know, retina scanning, or, you know, who knows, but there'll be some new little thing. But I think as far as them taking on a lot of new system level features, I think it would make sense right now for them to, you know, take what they started to do with the UI and in iOS 7 and really clean that up.
Yep, I agree. So here's something interesting that I haven't fact checked it out, but I'm going to say it anyway.
So you're a Republican?
Zing! Am I a Republican? Fuck no, I'm Canadian, man.
Guy lives in a province where the Liberal Party is the right wing.
Yes, literally the Liberal Party with the name Liberal Party is the right wing. So
that screwed me up in Australia too. It's like well, you're not liberal.
Yeah, well, yeah, those guys are. Once you go south of the equator, everything flips, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly.
It's metric politics.
What was I going to say? Yeah, so basically, it's my understanding, and I haven't checked the dates, but iOS is now older than OS X was when iOS was first introduced. Does that make sense?
Yeah, someone tweeted that.
Yeah, and I didn't actually fact check it, but it feels good. So, hey, it's got to be true.
Did you say it right? It was iOS is older now than OS X was when iOS was released.
Yes, which is to say that, like, from the time of introduction to the market, between from OS X to when iOS was first introduced with the first iPhone, there has now been more time since iOS was introduced, but then between that span.
Well, and it's interesting because when Craig mentioned that about Leopard, wasn't Leopard the release that was kind of delayed and janky because they diverted all those resources to the iPhone?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
And so I wonder, I don't think that's what's happening with iOS 7, but
no.
It feels like they just tried to do – this feels like System 7. If you think back to the Mac days, like,
you're not that old though, Rob.
What? Stop saying that.
You're like 21, aren't you?
No, I'm not that young.
Craig is that old.
All right, you know those like, have you ever heard of this site System 7 Today?
No.
So there's this group of people that are called, they're like fetish people. I mean, they have this thing with System 7 where they run old Mac hardware and try and run 7.6, which was this version that Apple created for cloners, but was never actually released officially by Apple. They went straight to System 8. And these people find this, and they had enough in 7.6. It had like some modern networking and some other things in it where you can actually run browsers and email programs. And they basically use these computers today and make them useful today. But they're this, you know, I don't know, gosh, it's 15, 20 year old operating system now. But the website is System 7 Today, and it's fascinating. And there's this whole, economy that's created around like Wi-Fi cards that worked in these machines. So I know about this because my wife's first computer in college was a PowerBook 1400C, and I love this machine, and I've kept it around. I keep it running. My wife thinks I'm crazy, but it has quite possibly one of the best laptop keyboards ever, and so I keep it around. I keep running it. So I found this site, I don't know, probably 7-8 years ago. It is a way to like keep it going and doing different things with it. And
do you guys still have your first iPhone?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you ever fire it up and use it for a bit?
I did a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. It's still freaking amazing.
I really like the feel of it. Like I'm holding it right now. The rounded edges.
Yeah.
So you know, I bought this thing without being able to use it.
Yeah.
Like all I could do is call 911. I'm not kidding. I bought it in San Francisco with Brent and Parrish, and for like a week I had it. I couldn't jailbreak it. Like a jailbreak wasn't out, and I just all I wanted to do was call 911 and be like, "I've got an iPhone, bitches." Check it.
So the thing with the original iPhone, I think it was, I don't know, the code name was like the M81 or something like that. And I was talking in Singleton last year to Chris Parker about it and saying, going through my droll that I don't like the metal iPhones. I don't like the metal cases. They don't feel as nice and smooth that I love the original case design of the original iPhone. And Chris Parker, who works for Apple, he looked at me like I was crazy and said, he said, "You know, there's a problem with the seams, right?" And so if you look at it on the edge,
Don't ruin this for me.
There's a notch on the edges that doesn't line up with the back black part on it. It's actually above it. But if you look at the fives, that seam goes all the way across the notch in the side for the.
Oh, you mean like the face is like slightly inset from the metal edge? Yeah.
No. But so you know the back of it, the bottom where
everything is,
there's that black piece.
Oh, you can feel. Oh, yeah, you can feel like a little ridge there.
But it's at a different height, than the home button and the other edge of the screen. And it was like once he pointed that out, I was like, okay, I've gotten over my original iPhone case fetish.
No, I still love my children. You can.
It can burn
in hell.
A bunch of us watched the keynote again. A bunch of us watched the keynote again on the weekend, and it's still amazing to watch Jobs introduce that device.
That article, the New York Times article that came out, was great.
Go ahead, Greg.
The thing that was amazing is that everybody's like, "Oh yeah, it's a phone. Oh yeah, it's an iPod, internet communicator."
Huh? Yeah, everybody cheered for widescreen iPod. That's what I cheered for. I was like, yes, widescreen iPod, touchscreens, control.
And it's like the whole internet communicator. I mean, it's like, you know, when was the last time you made a phone call on your iPhone?
Yeah.
You and Twitterific made internet communicator
important.
You made it concern. Right?
That's why I first jailbreak. You know, I was like, oh, I want to see if I could, you know, it's like somebody posted some source code that showed the UI table view, and you know, it had a delegate and a data source. And it's like, oh yeah, I get this. It's, you know, Objective-C, and all I got to do is figure out how to parse some XML. And
I mean, the jailbreak stuff was a little rough, or maybe I should say iPhone OS 1.0 was a little rough in terms of the it was clearly internal API, right? Like the names weren't quite there, and the stuff was like generally what you would do, but not what you would ship as public APIs.
But it was engineered to the point where I'm pretty confident that the guys who were working on it wanted it to be something that other developers could use. I mean, you know, you had guys like Chris Parker and, you know, these long time guys. Right.
And they were there to make it. I mean, that's the thing. Like the fact that someone like Chris worked on the project for so long, he was there to stabilize the APIs and define what those APIs were going to be, even if they weren't publicly saying that.
Did you guys read that article in Fast Company about the design side of the iPhone, how they had the skank phone and all that?
No, I miss it.
Interesting. Yeah, they had two phones. They had the phone that had the real UI, and then they had this other thing they called Skank Phone.
I thought that was just your thing, but that was like.
It's an article on Fast Company last week, and it's amazing that they had this, because they didn't, you know, they don't want the engineers leaking anything.
Right.
So they gave them this really crappy environment, which like it basically had a, you know, a radio some other stuff, and then they could launch their app and, you know, test it and run it and do all the things that we do. But they couldn't see, you know, they had no idea what the other apps on the phone were. They had no idea what, you know, the Springboard looked like.
Right.
You know, it's like, and it'd be pretty weird. You know, you're developing an app, you know, we all take inspiration from everybody else's apps, you know, system apps, mm-hmm. other third-party apps. These guys were just like, okay, some designer's giving us some spec here. We're going to, you know, build it to that spec.
Yeah, I've heard stories that the original iPhone OS, the original apps, like several different apps had written their own implementations of table, like UI table view and other things like that, that there wasn't, there was things called like phone table view and I think it was mail table view, like each of the individual apps had their own table view implementation. And it wasn't until they released, I guess it was 2.0 or 2.3 or whatever the first SDK release was, I guess it was 2.5, that they actually went in and unified those under, you know, using a common implementation. But even as late as, I want to say as late as iOS 4, iOS 5, there were still certain apps, system apps that were still using their original implementation and had switched over.
Right.
And because I think it was something, I was talking to the guy who wrote UI Collection View, and he was saying that because there was people in the UI Kit team that actually wanted to write UI Table View as a subclass of UI Collection View and like move that totally over so it was all one unified code base. But a lot of interesting things in there where it was like, it just seemed like each team was writing in their own sandbox, you know, literally isolated from the rest of the place.
Exactly. There wasn't a lot of code reuse because you had no idea what anybody else was making.
And I don't know, just
you had a scrolling list and that's it.
Is someone who runs a company, that's a maddening way to run a company. Like I would not build my, what should be my ultimate, you know, penultimate product. I wouldn't want to build it that way. Like they're that obsessive with secrecy.
But if anything had gotten out about the iPhone.
Yeah, you know how, I guess it's just, it's a different
world. You know how before the iPad came out, there were like those really crappy screenshots of, you know, kind of what the UI looked like and all that stuff. It's like, you know, if that had gotten out about the iPhone, that whole surprise and, you know, it sounds like from that article in the New York Times, this thing barely worked too.
Yep. Yeah. Right. It made me feel better when they said the memory, all their apps were exploding with memory. I was like, ha, they're human too. Because yeah. that first iPhone, and especially the first iPad, they were a nightmare to develop for. We had apps that were just, you know, client apps that were just constantly exploding. I mean, until they didn't. Like we felt like we wrote the basic prototype of the app in a couple of weeks and then spent months just getting the memory performance down to something that was reasonable. And they just release it and you see it and it's wonderful. And you're like, how did they do that? And they set this crazy bar, but it made me feel good that they were mortal reading that. I think it was the Times article that they were talking about that.
Yeah, well that's one thing that I love about WWDC is meeting Apple engineers. And, you know, they got the same problems that we do. You know, we think that you know, they've got some special set of circumstances or whatever. But, you know, in reality, that, you know, we all have crap that infuriates us. You know, stuff that doesn't work or stuff that we do that nobody else is going to see, you know. Right. It's like that one little thing you worked, you know, a day on, and nobody's but you is going to know that it's there.
Right. Apple does have a performance team that has it basically gets to call the shots. Like if they see that one team is doing something that's, you know, taking a lot of juice or being, taking too much memory. This team has the authority to just go and tell them how to do it.
Right.
And that helps a lot in terms of like what Rob's talking about, where, yeah, you know, like if you know, you write an app and then, oh my God, the memory's taken over. And then if you have these, you know, a team of like, I don't know, super chimps come in, like you know, like the overlords of tech just show up and tell you exactly what you're doing wrong and how to fix it. That helps a lot.
Yeah, I have Jeff LaMarche. That's my right. He's my super chimp. He just comes in and says, "You're a moron, Rob. Why are you doing it this way?" And fixes everything. Right. So I can just write like a naive fool. Yeah, I don't have to worry about things like that.
It's good. It's a way to do it.
What's the GLS, the OpenGL ES 3.0 like, Guy? Is that exciting?
Oh, yeah. And that's all I'm going to say. it's very, 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 very exciting. And it's exciting in ways that are really hard to describe in sort of a casual way. I don't even know where to begin. You can do deferred shading. Honestly, without giving you a primer on what, or a primer, as idiots say.
I don't even know what a primer is.
I love you, man. yeah. So deferred shading is basically where every pixel that you render out onto the screen has an RGB value, right? With deferred shading, what you can do is not just have an RGB value per pixel. That's what you'll end up with, but you can have multiple outputs per pixel. So rather than outputting an RGB value, you can, let's say, output a surface normal. And a normal is basically, you can imagine it being the direction from the object away from the light. This is just awful podcasting. Yeah, exactly. This is awful. You know what? OpenGL ES 3.0 will make shit look cool. That is some dope rad ass shit, brother.
Lens
there'll be
flares,
shiny
baby.
Shit. There'll be reflective shit. There'll be
bump I was actually
shit.
Following
there'll
you,
be
guy.
Shit all over.
Yeah. I was actually following you.
Yeah, I know. I could explain it, and I'm sure you could all follow. It's right. Just going to get real dry, yeah. Real quick.
Exactly. When, exactly. Yeah.
There'll be some cool shit there. Yeah. The stuff that's built into the A7 is incredible. It's a very, very powerful chip. I think it's it's almost like an overreach of power. Like I don't know why the hell that's in a phone, but
I was hesitant about them going 64-bit because I was thinking, you know, I made that stupid assumption everybody's been making, and it's like, oh, they, you know, you don't need that much memory address, you know, your pointers don't need to be 64-bit.
Yeah, I expected it next year. This year seems,
but it
aggressive, you know. But yeah,
but. The number of registers and the register speed 64-bit, I mean, it's like, okay, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. This must have been mentioned like a million times already, but everybody, especially if you listen to this show, it's called Debug, and ostensibly it's about being a nerd. Go read Mike Ash's piece on 64-bit.
It's essential.
I had the pleasure of actually hearing him go on about that, like his preparation for the talk. He lives very close to where I live. We live, I don't know, probably 5-10 minutes from each other. And we go to the same NS Coder night. And I think he read one article where someone was talking about it. He got pissed off and he's like, screw it. I'm just going to write something explaining this. And
I saw him get bent out of shit. Like, we're friends and he's on IRC a lot, and he got real bent out of shape while everybody was being an idiot about this 64-bit thing. You know what's funny? Did you see that? Maybe he didn't share this with you, and I've already said this publicly, but Gruber linked to him as like the canonical.
Did he show you the email?
This is exactly where I'm going. Yes. Somebody emails Mike wanting to argue with Gruber.
Yeah.
And Mike just let him have it. Like, Mike does not suffer that kind of thing lately. Like,
I wish you would post this publicly.
It was, oh my God. And you know what? Mike is not a, he's certainly not a Gruber Senker fan. Like, in any way. Like,
No, God, no.
Mike is a, I don't know.
Mike is his own
Trutherian. He's like, this is the facts and here it is. And I'm going to.
And he's not, if he says something, you know it's right. He's one of those, he's researched the hell out of it. That truth is a hard won truth.
Yeah. I'd put him in a cage match with Syracuse.
Oh yeah.
And the world the world might actually end at that point. I don't know. Yeah.
You might drain all of the energy out of the planet at that point.
Could go south.
Boil the sea.
Hi guys.
Mike is refreshing. Like, there aren't a lot of intellectuals that are as comfortable with their, you know, with what they know as well as he does, because he's wonderful that you always know when he's talking to you from a point of authority.
Yeah.
And when he's coming to you and saying, look, I don't know what I'm talking about. And he's truly asking for advice. He's
not that, like, that is a point of authority, right? Like, that's the whole, it's the same. It seems disjoint, but it's the same modus operandi, right? Where it's like, I am at all times 100% confident in what I know and what I don't know. And I
will say this,
I know publicly, this and I don't know that, you know, help.
And I want to say this publicly about him. He's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Like, people think he is this mean, crazy person because of his persona on Twitter. He's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And he would
He's super nice. Do people think he's mean and crazy?
Yeah, people think I run into people all the time, and what's hard for me is I've seen him around his daughter. Like, I've seen him in dad mode.
Yeah.
And it's like, no one can be a jerk in dad mode. Like, it, everybody's soft in dad mode, but he's one of the nicest guys you'll meet.
No, I totally believe it. I worked with him for a couple of years, and he's a brilliant guy. I love bouncing dumbass ideas off him. And by dumbass, I mean crazy in-depth technical things that if you shipped it, you should be put in jail. but they're kind of fun to think about, you know? Like, that's the kind of, you know, he's awesome. So we're about an hour and 15 minutes in, and we haven't actually discussed anything.
I wanted to ask Luke about screens going to iOS 7.
Thank you, Renee. You keep saving the show.
Just one guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Luke, you were working on Screens 3, and I was talking to you at WWDC, and then we saw iOS 7, and then you got this look on your, in your eye, like you were going to wait for that before you went to Screens 3.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we started working on the version 3, like, over a year ago, but it wasn't really going anywhere. And then there were all these rumors about iOS 7 being quite different. So, we just held it off and just tried to work on the backend and everything else that wouldn't require any design. And then I was pretty happy to have waited for iOS 7. But it was I had a weird feeling though, but because it was kind of new and didn't know how to use it correctly and just not put blur views everywhere, but just like try to understand the philosophy behind it. I think we did a good job with it, with screens, but then again, we didn't have any third party apps, to compare with because we were there, on iOS 7 launch day. But then again, most people are like us, I guess. And it's still a learning process. It is for Apple as well, I guess. I don't think it's going to be, I think iOS 8 will be better than iOS 7 is because they'll learn along the way as well. But overall, it went pretty smoothly because then, like I said earlier, we installed iOS 7 on our daily devices almost right away. I actually bought an iPod Touch just to install it. But at some point, I said, "Well, I just have to have it on my iPhone and my iPad so I can learn how to use it." So I ended up never really using that iPod Touch, but. Overall, it was exciting because I didn't feel like doing all the whole same thing all over again.
That iPod Touch was the first time I played with the iOS 7, so good.
That's why I'm not using it anymore.
Good purchase. Yeah, after I touched it, you're like...
It's going in the burn bag.
I don't want it, yeah. So, Craig, how did you... Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just going to say... We're thinking along the same lines here, Guy.
Yeah.
We ripped out a lot of code. I mean, we'd done a lot of customization. You know, we had a fairly flat, minimal UI for the iOS 6 version. But the more we did, the more it's like, you know, well, we don't really need that. You know, we had this custom button class that could draw rounded buttons, put gradients on them, do all sorts of fancy stuff. In fact, it was called Fancy Shape Button, the name of the class.
That's good. You know, that's interesting because you guys were sort of famously one of the most iOS 7-ish apps.
Yeah,
one of the most prescient.
Like, yeah, like clearly skating to where the puck ended up being, right?
Yeah, well, the thing where we got lucky is we were thinking the same thing that the people at Apple were thinking, in that we've got a lot of Chrome on this app. We don't need all this stuff. Just what can we get rid of? What can we pair it? How do we pair it back? And, you know, we had a, you know, probably a year's head start on everybody in thinking about how to do that. Mm-hmm. And there are still apps that you can tell that they're still thinking about it. You know, they wanted to have something out on day one.
Yeah.
You know, but.
And they just make everything flat and don't really rethink any of the, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, there's some questionable things. It's like that, like on Instagram, how the top bar goes from blue to being white. That kind of bugs me. You know, it's just like, okay, yeah, I understand you guys got to have your branding and everything, but, you know, that the status bar changing colors, and I'm sure that was hard to do too. It's getting that animation right and the transitions all looking good.
You know what's funny?
Yeah.
What's it called? Vesper.
Yeah.
Betas for 7 had the status bar changing color to white, and it would screw up the battery meter.
Yeah.
And the shipping bill doesn't do it. I don't know if I'm supposed to be airing dirty laundry like that, but it's an interest.
Well, we all have it. Yeah.
No, they're not going to care. They're fine with it.
Craig, I thought what you guys did really well with Twitterific is you guys were able to keep your icon very much intact, yet very much in the feel of iOS 7. Like you were able, not just your app branding, but even the icon branding, I felt like carried over well. And that's something I still impresses me. Like you were able to remove the right amount of detail, but still keep everything pretty much the same.
The thing with that we're discovering with iOS 7 icons is that it's hard to, you know, it looks like it's going to be easy to just flatten it, right? But it's like simplifying your software, right? You know, you got to go in and figure out, you know, what elements in this complicated iOS 6 design do you not really need anymore, right? Some of them are essential to carry the brand. Some of them are not, you know, so it's not just a matter of, you know, changing the gradients and changing, you know, making sure things fit in the new grid and that kind of thing. It's a lot of times rethinking what you're trying to communicate. And, I'm surprised that Instagram didn't change their icon with their release. I mean, they did all this work on the UI. And I think, I've complained about the status bar there, but I think they did a great job.
Going edge to edge with the photos.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great. And, you know, you'd see a lot of simplifications throughout the app. Not totally sold on the round avatars, but, you know, that's... I can see why they did that.
Round avatars to me just seems needlessly lossy. Like you're losing information at that point.
Yeah. You can't even throw them like chat heads. Such a
False. I mean, they're cute and they're kind of all of age, but it's lossy. Like it.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I'm looking like, doesn't Twitterific have round? Aren't the avatars round for the accounts?
For the switcher, but not for the timeline itself. So yeah. The reason it's round at the top is so that it mimics the roundness of the compose button. You know, there's some symmetry there. But that whole process. In fact, Justin Williams actually posted something good on his blog that, you know, that what we're seeing now, just that everybody taking a first pass of flattening everything and, you know, starting to pare things back and, you know, reevaluate, you know, do we really need this feature that adds a lot of visual complexity to our UI? You know, that's just the beginning, right? In another 6 months, we'll have a better idea of what we need to do. Another year, you know, our apps are going to look totally different and they're going to behave different.
Do you see skeuomorphism making a comeback in any way? And I don't mean like stitched leather over the top stuff, but maybe like a less handling.
I don't think it ever left. I think if you look at some of the effective apps, there's still, I think, some skeuomorphic elements in those apps.
Multitasking is a card deck, which is a very, you know, real world element.
Or even the even the springboard animation itself. The new springboard animation is very skeuomorphic. Like it's using a visual to represent a hierarchy that's there that isn't. It isn't real.
Okay. Yes. Fine. Let's.
You mean the richly textured stuff?
Let me rephrase that a bit. Will textures make a comeback at some point?
I think
hot next season. It's kind of a stupid question.
Iconography is always represented by two major things: color and shape.
Right.
And that's what we have with our UIs now: color and shape. The details and that kind of thing, I think they're not going away in games and things like that. Right. You know, Louis Checkers game. I mean, if he flattened that, it looked like shit. And he's not going to do that. He's not, you know, he's a good designer.
Not only is he not going to do that, he's going to spend 8 hours telling you why he won't do that and why you're an idiot.
When he comes back from Disney.
Yeah, exactly. With Mickey Mouse ears. Hi, Louis.
But in apps that deal with content, I think it's hugely important to, you know, let the words, let the images shine through. That's one of the things you just said about Instagram, Rob. It's that you like that the photos are a little bit bigger and they go edge to edge. I mean, that's
simple change.
That's
everything.
A simple exactly. It makes the content more pleasing. It's easier to deal with.
They also did some things in color where they use more neutral colors for their Chrome as well, so that the photos pop even more. Right. And that's where I'd like to see people experiment more with color than they are right now in iOS 7. I feel like everybody thinks I need to have this simple shape and I need to use one of the default, you know,
white.
Colors,
everything's got to be white.
Color scheme. Yeah, everything's got to be white. And it's.
Well, you know, one of the things we had most fun with in Twitterific is the dark theme, right? You know, you can set the dark theme in Twitterific, and it's very different than the dark theme in iOS 6. It just what worked in iOS 6, you know, being dark, you know, black is black, didn't work in iOS 7.
You want to use more of a charcoal, I think.
Right. Yeah, that's what we ended up doing. You know, it's more like the slight gray versus space gray versus the black for the iPhone 5.
I'd like to see more neutral color, like see people explore with other neutrals. I mean, white's not the only neutral that you can use. And I feel like what Apple's telling us is you should use neutral colors when possible, but not necessarily, you know, they chose white. Because I think they're trying to give us a blank slate intentionally.
And we haven't seen any of their App Store apps redone yet.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they give iWork away for free. And it's like Pages is just over the top with this stitched.
My guess is that we'll see new apps from Apple in the next iPad event, I guess.
Yeah, October 22nd.
Yeah, that would certainly iWork. That would be a good place for them to do an iWork update.
We all know how much work it's been to update our apps.
Yeah.
And
those are complicated apps.
Exactly. Those are not just, you know, whip them up kind of. I mean, you look at an app like Find My Friends, you know, everybody can, you know, the back end services are going to be all the same. You know, they just got a little bit of front end stuff, but I don't know. I could be wrong, but it seems like that iWork is.
No, I don't think I will see iWork. Not in this time frame, but mostly iBooks and all these smaller apps from Apple.
I don't think they'll flatten GarageBand. I mean, that would be a shame.
Well, to me, that's one of the things I was saying. It's like that's a game. GarageBand is a game. It's not a product. The app. It's not a. It's, you know, it's a learning tool. It's something you have fun with, right? It's like
the content is those instruments.
Yeah, right. It's skeuomorphism makes sense in that case.
Yeah, it's a toy.
My friends would.
You know what? I love that you've just described GarageBand as a game. I think that's it's like that should be a pull quote from this entire GabFest.
I wish we had show titles.
No, it's insightful because it's something you play with and the output is something you enjoy. And I think it's an astute observation. Yeah.
It's probably Apple's most impressive game ever, right? And the only thing they've ever done besides that was that
Texas Hold'em
game.
Texas
Hold'em.
On the iPod.
It had one of the players that everybody thought was Phil Schiller and may have been Phil Schiller.
I wish they'd kept that around and used it as a test bed for Game Center so Lauren didn't have to knock it down all by himself.
Yeah.
Are there any signs? Are any of you still using iCloud for anything? Is that any sign that's gotten better or Game Center's gotten better? Or?
Well, we use iCloud. We use the document syncing in Briefs, and for us, it's worked well enough that people who didn't use Briefs before iCloud was enabled, they don't even think about Briefs making it to their iOS devices now. It's just there. And so for us, it's worked like it has on the 10, but it was a lot of programming to get to that. Like it was a lot of work and a lot of edge cases and a lot of test cases we needed to test. But for us, it was a matter of putting in the effort.
Luke did a good job with that with Screens. I mean, I had Screens 2 installed, and it's like I launched Screens 3 the first time, and I went over to set up all my machines. I was like, oh, crap, they're already there.
Yeah.
We're using the key value store. We're not using any documents.
Yeah. That for us is the, you know, the key value store is great. I mean, that's, you know, everybody. iCloud can be either really hard, like you're using it with Core Data, or really easy, you're just using the key value store. And I think it's great for the key value store. I think for the harder things, like Core Data, I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole right now.
Yeah, the Core Data is, I agree. But the document syncing, some people have complained about the document syncing, but we found it works. It's just, it requires a lot of testing.
We've had one guy have issues with the napkin, with the document syncing, and for the life of me, I can't repeat it.
It's gone off the rails.
Yeah, I don't know.
And for the testing with iCloud, I don't really hold that against iCloud because I think any syncing solution you would use, you would want to test heavily, no matter what. Like that's just the nature of syncing. Even if you wrote your own, you're still going to heavily test it. So.
Yeah, I just don't like having a customer who gets his document get corrupted. That kind of stinks, you know.
Brent was on last week, and I haven't listened to it yet. And I looked for it today. I was going to listen to it, but I guess you haven't posted it yet. So.
No, I haven't listened to it
but
either.
I
and it's my show.
I love the fact that he is going through the whole process of thinking about core data and thinking about syncing and doing that in public. A lot of us are learning things about that. In fact, you know, his approach with how he manages core data contexts, you know, where that the main context is on a private queue and then a child context is on the main queue. That's like, oh. And we tried that the other day and it's like, wow, that's pretty freaking good.
Yeah. Now, Brent has been a quiet and persistent, not even quiet, but he's just been a persistent, by quiet, I mean like he doesn't showboat ever.
No.
But I mean, it's going on like, yeah, well, yeah, that's different though. But I mean, you know, it's going on what, 15 years of him being an awesome boon to the community. Like his blog posts are killer. Like he'll just say, like, this is exactly what's happening. This is why I'm doing it. Here's what I'm thinking.
You know what else?
It's so great. Yeah.
He's a good writer.
Yeah.
Yes.
That.
Well, you know why? It's because he's a good reader. He's a lit major or something, you know? Yeah.
He's a voracious reader. So.
Is there anything in Iowa? Are you guys missing anything in particular? I mean, a lot of people have complained that there's no really good blur beyond the status bar, and Touch ID is not accessible to anybody but Apple, similarly to Siri. Is there anything that's just bugging you that you can't get at?
We thought about doing blur at one point when we're like bringing up the photos, and we realized that while the photo was loading, you got the progress bar. By just knocking the color back, we could actually read other tweets in the timeline while the photo's loading. So it was like, no, we don't want blur there. Right? It gives you something, you know. I think there are blur is going to get overused. The designers all see that the in fact, I kind of don't like the fact how it does it in the camera. The camera transitions between the different modes, the square, the panorama, video. They seem kind of weird, not very smooth. And I think a lot of it has to do with that little blurring effect that they do as a part of the transition.
I mean, for the thing I don't get with the blur is I've heard a lot of people say, oh, yeah, we want whatever their live blur is or whatever. But to accomplish what they accomplish is not terribly difficult. Like if you look at their blur and look what they're doing – I mean, yeah, if you try and apply a core image filter blur to it and expect it to be performant, it's not going to work. But there are cheats and little hacks you can do to achieve the same effect that they're doing with public API. It's not terribly difficult if you're willing to spend a couple days on it and try and figure it out. You know, things like we had to write, we use blur on iOS, and we also have to replicate it on Android, and we had to write the Android blur from scratch. And one of the things we did is you don't blur the full resolution of the image, like cut it in by 9 or cut it by 8, right, and then blur that and then stretch it back out. You're not going to notice the difference if it's a heavy enough blur. And the iOS 7 blur is heavy enough that you can reduce it a lot.
Have you noticed that there's a little bit of sparkly, you know, like you're moving a solid element block behind a nav bar, or a tab bar, a UI nav bar, a UI tab bar, and it gets kind of you can see the sampling going on if you look real close,
because they're using color averaging as well.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's some subsampling, some averaging, because my understanding is that it's the thing that's expensive is to pull that all the layers off the GPU and then do whatever you got to do and then get them back onto the GPU. So, you know, it's a round trip, and you want to minimize the amount of data that's going in that round trip. I don't think it's all done on the GPU, though. It might be. I don't.
You can do it on the GPU.
In theory, you could do it on the GPU. In practice, it depends on.
That's right.
What layer of access you have to the thing. I think if you're using, if, certainly if you're using public APIs, you're going to have to pull something back off.
Right.
Good news is that on iOS devices, there's not a lot of cost going over the. It's not like you're actually uploading it over the PCI card to whatever PCI bus onto a graphics card.
Yeah, and I thought in iOS 7,
it's all shared memory, so it's not quite as bad.
And in iOS 7, you can get the view hierarchy flattened, and they have that new method for it, and it's crazy fast. It's to the point where I think they've removed the mem copy there, where you're keeping it on the card, and they're just reading the raw texture off of that.
A bunch of cheats, and since they control the GPU, they control the driver and the GL stack, they can add whatever they need to that fast if they want.
And they added that in they've had it for two versions of Navy Foundation where you can do this, where you can get the current image off the buffer and put it into an accessible piece of GL, your GL memory space, your texture map, without doing a copy. And it's because it's like they have it in one partition. They're just saying, okay, we're going to give you, an expiring pointer to that.
Exactly. It's kind of like the way IO Surface works, which is, mysterious, but like a lot of the times it's just passing around like an int. It's, effectively a pointer. It's effectively a chunk of shared memory that's managed by the system, and you can pass around a sort of an opaque access token to it.
Yeah, but they're not going to give you IO Surface in iOS.
No,
it's security leak.
Yes, it's there. It's the basis of a lot of stuff that they do.
Why would it be a security leak?
Because if you have the IO Surface, it's literally what's in the frame buffer at that point. So if you could access that at any point, you could access the contents that's being displayed by the app. You could screenshot any app, essentially, and pull that texture contents from any app. Because it's below the sandbox layer. I'm not describing that very well, but it's...
No, yeah.
I get you.
It's shared... It's memory shared by the system. So if you go poking around and you can just get anyone you want, you can get anyone you want, and that's could be bad news.
UI dynamics, man. UI motion. Luke, how come I can't throw my screens around and have them bounce off each other?
I don't know. Do you do that at home?
it's a long time between podcasts, Luke. I got to keep busy.
Yeah. Well, we didn't want to do any anything crazy with physics and motions and stuff, because we wanted to make sure that it made sense and it was just not used just for the show. So
iMessage.
At some point we wanted to get that bouncy effect in the toolbar, but I think it would have been nice for people to discover, but it wasn't really required.
I think it's an element that can make an app fun and more delightful to use, but it's also something that you can pretty quickly get into you're hurting the app more than you're helping it.
Easy
to abuse. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. So, I mean, we took kind of the same approach that Luke just described. It's just like, okay. And we only had 90 days. That was all that, as always, we all knew that we didn't know what the exact day was, but we all knew it was going to be kind of middle of September, just, from last year. It's a date that makes sense. It's like, the date that they announced today for the iPad event. It's like, oh, that's a surprise. So, that's the kind of thing that that's what I'm saying. I said earlier is that, you know, in 6 months, you know, maybe we'll have a better handle on what we want to do with UI Dynamics, right? And start using it, start playing around with it. There are some ideas that we have as far as view controller transitions, which I think are another thing. I mean, the way Calendar works, it's really, and the Photos app as well. I really like the way that it gives you a sense of moving up and down through your a lot of photos to just one photo. And that to me is actually the more important thing is, you know, yeah, there's probably some dynamics in that and there are some new technologies there, but it really is about making the end product that you use more accessible, make more sense, more usable.
Yeah, I think more real, in a tangible sense.
Well, that's kind of what you were saying earlier about it being skeuomorphic, right? It's you go back to like Minority Report and some of these other, you know, futuristic, you know, movie UIs, right? They look very real, right? They act, you know, they're very reactive. And that's where we're heading. And that's to me the exciting thing is that we're getting very reactive UIs, which is awesome. It's also hard, right?
Yeah,
turn into a game, which you never win.
Well, and I think you're right that over time we're going to get better about it. And I wrote a blog post a while back about the reaction to kind of authentic design. That someone said that iOS 7 was authentic digital design, and I made the argument that it's actually just more, it is more skeuomorphic in the sense that it's more real and more environmental in what they're trying to create. And I think, you know, and I compared it to kind of, you know, early architecture and, you know, and looking at also, you know, modern 20th century, you know, turn of the century architecture. And I feel like that, where people were kind of relearning to use this, it's like we've gotten a new set of materials that we're learning to use. And, you know, over the next couple of years and maybe decades, we'll learn how to use this in more effective ways and more innovative ways and think about things. It's not just about removing textures. Like, I think that's a very fashionable thing that they've done. But the dynamics are, you know, the dynamics are not about, you know, having menus fly in or having a little bounce here and there. I think it's something more. It's about making this, like when you combine that with the parallax, how just something that seems like a parlor trick with the parallax actually makes the device feel more real. It makes it feel alive. It makes it feel like it has depth in a way it didn't have before. And that's where I think dynamics could really be important, is that it's going to give this sense of depth and this sense of, I don't know, I just keep coming back to the word tangible, that it makes something tangible when in reality it's just transmitted light. That's all we're seeing. And it's bridging the gap. You know, we're touching a piece of glass and we're interacting with these things in our minds. And this is kind of just increasing that so that when we touch it, it reacts as it would if we touched, you know, the soda can on our desk or our mouse or something like that.
Yeah, and we're going to make a lot of mistakes in traveling along that path, you know, making more realistic, more dynamic UIs. I mean, and that's one reason to take a little bit of a cautious approach. I mean, we build a lot of stuff that we end up never shipping because we think, well, let's see how this feels, and we get it implemented and it's like, oh, this feels like crap. Right? This is frustrating.
I think that's going to become more important for developers too. I think there are a lot of developers that don't take that same approach where they build it and they ship it. You know, they design it up front, they build it to meet their spec, and they say, okay, it's ready to go. And they don't really go through that process of actually using it. And I feel like right. The iPhone made that more important when it first was introduced. Like, it was much more important to use it when the iPhone came out. And I think we're kind of at that next level where now it's even more important to use it. Where if you take a week to develop something, you should use it for 2 weeks and live with it before you really know, is this worthwhile or not? Is this working or not? Using it in real world scenarios. You know, if you're building a camera, go and take it out and take as many pictures with it as you can, you know, before you know, okay, this little particular interaction or this thing I did was actually working. And I think with dynamics, it's going to become that much more important because you've got to get over the initial, oh, wow, that's cool. This is neat. No, it's like, okay, what does it feel like the 10,000th time I do that? Is it old? Does it get on my nerves? Is it slowing me down?
Yeah, it all goes back to, you know, getting it on your carry device because you're forced to use it every day, all day.
Someone complained, I think it was Marco a while back. He complained that the transitions were too slow on iOS 7. And I disagree with him. I feel like they actually feel really nice because there's still that same acceleration. And they accelerate about the same amount of time as the old transitions, but they take just a little bit longer to settle.
Except they're not interruptible. I mean, I think on one of the early versions of the iPhone, the minute you touch the screen, it stopped the animation and made it responsive. And this one, you're forced to wait for them to finish.
I don't necessarily think that's true in the shipping version. It was true in earlier betas, but and I may be mistaken. I'm kind of speaking off the cuff, but it felt like once you get past that kind of initial inertia, you can kind of interrupt it and work with it. But I mean, it may be wrong. Maybe I'm still trying to get my damn Touch ID thumb to register. So.
I mean, if this show was a bunch of idiots sitting around having a drink and talking shop.
Mission accomplished.
This episode is it.
And I'm out of beer.
Craig, where can people find out more about you and more about the fantastic software you make?
Chalklock.com. No. you should go to chalklock.com and view source. The best part about chalklock.com is viewing the source.
Okay.
But now, verbo.org is my personal site, and iconfactory.com is the business.
And they can find you on Chalk and Barry on Twitter.
Yes. Yes. That unholy alliance between Count Chocula and Frankenberry.
Luke, where can they find you?
Company name is Edovia. It's E-D-O-V-I-A .com. I'm on Twitter at Luke Vandal, L-U-C-V-A-N-D-A-L. I just hate that I have to spell everything, but anyways, that's what happens when you're a French Canadian.
French Canadians can spell, not like the English ones.
Awesome. Yeah,
Rob,
my company is Martian Craft. We have a very thin site at martiancraft.com. I'm also on Twitter. I'm Captain Taco. It's abbreviated CAPTTACO. And I have a very rarely written on blog at blog.robrun.com. Briefs is briefs or giveabrief.com is the URL. And we're also Briefs App on Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
That's Martian Craft's primary product.
That was a blast.
Yeah,
it was fun.
A lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Good conversation.
Just as a public service announcement, do not go to chalklock.com.
I just went. I'm sorry I did.
Yeah. I know the American government is shut down, so the CDC can't take care of this, but they should.
Edit your local host file, make it impossible for you to go there.
Yeah, there should be some emergency funding.
Oh, come on. It's better than Gizmodo.
You know what? You're not wrong there. I'll give you that. This JavaScript pop-up that comes up every now and then, it just makes me want to give you a hug.
Yeah, you don't know how much fun that was for me to do.
I love that you misspell website. The details of how shitty this is are like, that took you a lot of work.
People wonder where the Chalklock comes from. It's from doing years and years of customer support. You know, dealing with all the people that know everything.
Yeah.
And chalklock.com is like the website where it's every stupid
it's the monster
thing
that was created inside you.
Happens at once.
Yeah, I like that you, and I've got another, oh God, now there's goddamn fucking rainbow curses. I do, I think it's healthy that you managed to get out your rage by just hitting on caps lock every now and then. Because you're a big guy and I'd hate to see it, you know.
I know.
You know, if you bottled us up, the world would be a worse place.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
You got to go. You know.
I do. I don't think I was recording this last little bit.
That's fine.
It doesn't matter. Who cares?
It doesn't. Right. It's not up on my meters, but whatever.
No worries. I appreciate it.
Talk to you guys later.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Craig.
That was great.
Bye.
Bye.